Track 23. Jesus rises and appears to Mary first. Peter's and John's disbelief in the resurrection, and Jesus appears to Mary Magdalene.
It is early Sunday morning, and Mary Magdalene is engaged in earnest conversations with Peter and John about believing and not believing that Jesus will rise again. Annoyed with the two apostles, the Magdalene then goes into the mother's room and says, "We will wait for him. The rest, those who do not believe, we will lock them in over there with their doubts." And with her emotional exuberance, the Magdalene presses to her breast the head of Mary, who is sitting. She kisses and caresses her. She tidies the light locks of her hair ruffled behind her ears. And with her linen dress, she wipes the fresh tears that stream down her cheeks again. Soon afterwards, the question arises among the women disciples as to who will go to the tomb. They try to dissuade Mary from going because she is too weak to stand and hasn't eaten for 2 days. But Mary says, "It is my duty. I have always taken care of him. Only during these last 3 years, when he was in the world, when he was far away from me, I surrendered the care of him to other people. Now that the world has rejected and disowned him, he is mine again, and I am once again his servant." Mary Magdalene takes Mary back to her seat. She kneels in front of her. She embraces her knees, raising her sorrowful, loving face towards her, and she promises, "With his spirit, he knows and sees everything. But with my kisses, I will tell his body your love and your wish." Oh, my power of loving was not able to take his place on the cross. But all that I was not able to do for him, I can still do for you. Mother, whom I love with all my heart, rely on me. In the house of Simon the Pharisee, I knew how to gently caress his holy feet. Now, with my soul that opens more and more to grace, and with greater gentleness, I will be able to caress his holy limbs, to dress his wounds with the balm taken from my heart, wrung by love and sorrow. And I, Mother, with your perfect love, with my total love, will embalm my King of love." Mary kisses the impassioned woman, and she yields to her entreaties. The women go out, taking a lamp. The Magdalene is the last to go, after a last kiss to the mother who remains. Mary kneels down, as she did the previous evening, face to face with the veil of the Veronica. She prays and speaks to her son, and she expresses her hope also to the Father, her hope and her request. "O Father, you have abandoned your son for the welfare of men, and then you have comforted him, because you have certainly received him on your bosom after his death. Do not leave me any longer in abandonment. I suffer and offer it for the welfare of men, but console me now, Father. Father, mercy. Mercy, Son. Mercy, Divine Spirit. Remember your Virgin." It must be very late on Holy Saturday night, or very early on the Sunday morning. Maria Valtorta describes what she sees. Prostrated on the floor, Mary seems to be praying with her attitude as well as with her heart. She is really a poor, crushed thing. She does not even notice the shaking of a short but strong earthquake that makes the master and mistress of the house shout and run away, while Peter and John, as white as death, drag themselves as far as the threshold of the room. But as they see her absorbed in her prayer, inattentive, unaware of what is not God, they withdraw, closing the door, and frightened as they are, they go back into the supper room. The closed window is opened with a violent banging of heavy shutters, and with the first ray of the sun, Jesus enters. Mary, who has been shaken by the noise and has raised her head, sees her radiant son. He is handsome, infinitely more handsome than he was before suffering, smiling, lively, brighter than the sun, dressed in a white garment like woven light, and he is coming towards her. She straightens herself up on her knees, and crossing her hands on her breast, she says with a sob that is joy and grief, "Lord, my God!" And she remains, enraptured in contemplating him. Her face is all washed by tears, but is made serene and pacified by his smile and by the ecstasy. Jesus calls her, stretching out his hands, from the wounds of which emanate rays that make his glorious flesh even brighter. "Mother!" But it is not the sorrowful word of the conversations and the farewells before his passion, or the heart-rending lament of the meeting on Calvary and of the agony. It is a cry of triumph, of joy, of freedom, of rejoicing, of love, of gratitude. He bends over his mother who dare not touch him. He places his hands under her bent elbows and lifts her up. He presses her to his heart and kisses her. With a cry, Mary flings her arms around his neck and she embraces and kisses him, laughing in her weeping. She kisses his forehead where there are no longer any wounds, his head no longer unkempt and bloody, his shining eyes, his healed cheeks, and his mouth no longer swollen. She then takes his hands and kisses their backs and palms and their radiant wounds. And she suddenly bends down to his feet, uncovers them from under his bright garment, and kisses them. Then she stands up. He smiles and understands. He uncovers his chest a little and says, "And this one, Mother, are you not kissing this one that grieved you so much, and that you alone are worthy to kiss? Kiss my heart, Mother. Your kiss will cancel the last remembrance of what is sorrowful, and will give me that joy which my joy of having risen from the dead still lacks." He takes the face of his mother in his hands, and he lays her lips on the lips of the wound of his chest, from which streams of a very bright light are flowing. Mary's face is haloed by that light, flooded as it is with its beams. She kisses and kisses, while Jesus caresses her. Jesus speaks now. "It is all over, Mother. You no longer have to weep over your son. The trial is over. Redemption has taken place. Mother, thank you for conceiving me, for bringing me up, for helping me in life and in death. I heard your prayers come to me. They have been my strength in my grief and my companions in my journey on the earth and beyond the earth. They came to me on the cross and to limbo. They have come with me to paradise, preceding, like an angelical voice, the procession of the redeemed led by the Redeemer, so that the angels should be ready to greet the conqueror who was returning to his kingdom. They have been seen and heard by the Father and by the Spirit, who smiled at them as if they were the most beautiful flower and the sweetest song born in paradise. They have been recognized by the patriarchs and by the new saints, by the first new citizens of my Jerusalem. And I bring you their thanks, Mother, together with the kisses of their relatives, with their blessings, and with that of Joseph, the spouse of your soul. All of heaven sings its hosanna to you, Mother, Holy Mother. I will now go to the Father in my human appearance. Paradise must see the conqueror in his appearance of man, by means of which he defeated the sin of man. But I will come again. I must confirm in the faith those who do not yet believe, and those who are in need to believe, to lead the others to believe. I must fortify the timid ones who will need so much strength to resist the world. Then I will ascend to heaven, but I will not leave you alone. Mother, can you see that veil? In my annihilation, I still exhaled the power of miracle on your behalf to give you that comfort. But for you, I will work another miracle. You will have me in the sacrament as real as when you carried me. You will never be alone. In these past days, you have been alone, but that sorrow of yours was also required for my redemption. You are the one who, by yourself, will do more than all the others together. But this long abandonment was also required. Now, no longer so. I am no longer separated from the Father. You will no longer be separated from your Son. And by having your Son, you have our Trinity. A living heaven, you will bring the Trinity to men on the earth, and you will sanctify the Church, you, Queen of the Priesthood and Mother of the Christians. Then I will come to get you, and no longer shall I be in you, but you will be in me, in my kingdom, to make paradise more beautiful. I am going now, Mother. I am going to make the other Mary happy. Then I will ascend to the Father. Thence I will come to those who do not believe. Mother, your kiss as a blessing, and my peace to you as a companion. Goodbye. And Jesus disappears in the sunshine that streams down from the early morning clear sky. Mary Magdalene, after the earthquake, runs to the tomb and finds it empty. She returns to the house of the Last Supper and tells Peter and John. Arriving at the tomb with the Magdalene behind them, the two apostles also find it empty, and looking annihilated, they return to the house. But the Magdalene stays and encounters Jesus, whom at first she does not recognize, thinking him to be a gardener. Mary! Jesus shines in calling her. He reveals himself in his triumphant brightness.
Rabboni!
She stands up, rushes to Jesus' feet, and would like to kiss them. Jesus moves her away, hardly touching her forehead with the tips of his fingers. He says, "Do not touch me. I have not yet ascended to my Father in this appearance. Go to my brothers and friends and tell them that I am ascending to my Father and yours, to my God and yours, and then I will come to them." And Jesus disappears absorbed by an unsustainable light. Mary Magdalene kisses the ground where Jesus was, and she runs towards the house. She goes in like a rocket. She opens the door of Mary's room and drops on her breast, shouting, "He has risen! He has risen!" And she weeps happily. Peter and John rush there, and Peter shakes his head, saying, "Too many things during these days. They have been upset." The Magdalene raises her head from Mary's breast and says, "I have seen him. I have spoken to him. He told me that he is ascending to the Father, and then he will come. How handsome he was!" And she weeps as she has never wept, now that she no longer has to torture herself to oppose the doubt rising from every side. But Peter and John are very doubtful. They look at each other, and their eyes say, "Women's fancy." Then also Susanna and Salome, who had just previously returned from the empty tomb but have not said anything, dare to speak. But the very inevitable difference in the details makes the doubt, and more than that, the persuasion of the apostles, grow stronger and stronger. Mary, the Blessed Mother, is silent, supporting the Magdalene. I do not understand the mystery of this maternal silence. Mary of Alphaeus says to Salome, "Let the two of us go back there. Let us see whether we are all intoxicated." And they run out. The other women remain there, quietly derided by the two apostles. Mary is silent, engrossed in a thought that each interprets in a personal manner, and no one realizes that it is ecstasy. The two elderly women come back. "It is true, it is true. We have seen him. He said to us, 'Peace to you, be not afraid. Go and tell my brothers that I have risen from the dead, and that they should go within a few days to Galilee. We shall be together again there.' That is what he said. Mary is right. We must inform those who are at Bethany, Joseph, Nicodemus, the most faithful disciples, and the shepherds. Oh, he has risen!" And they all weep happily. And then Peter says, "You are mad, women. Grief has upset you. I can only believe what I have seen. The open, empty sepulchre, and the guards who have run away with the stolen corpse. Women." He shrugs his shoulders and is about to go away. Then the mother, who still has the Magdalene on her heart, weeping like a willow tree in a downpour, raises her transfigured face and says a short sentence, "He has really risen. I have had him in my arms, and I kissed his wounds." She then bends over the head of the passionate woman and says to her, "Yes, joy is even stronger than sorrow, but it is only a grain of sand compared to what will be your ocean of eternal joy. You are blessed because you made your spirit speak above reason." Peter dare not deny any longer, and with one of those sudden changes of the old Peter, who is coming back to light again, he says, as if the delay depended on the others and not on him, "Then, if it is so, we must let the others know. Look for those spread out in the country and take action. Come on, get a move on. If he really should come, let him at least find us." And he does not realize that again he confesses that he does not believe blindly in Jesus' resurrection. Jesus comments to Maria Valtorta, "The fervent prayers of Mary have anticipated my resurrection by some time, as when with her prayers she opened the heavens a few years in advance of the predetermined time to give the world its salvation, so now she obtains my return some hours in advance to give comfort to her dying heart.